Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North. Louisa May Alcott published Volume 1 of her novel Little Women in 1868. The second volume came along in 1869. The story follows the lives of the four March sisters, Meg, Jo, Beth, and Amy, and their journeys from childhood to adulthood. The novel and its now 8 film adaptations addresses themes like domesticity, work, love, and women's longing for independence and greater meaning. It was an immediate success when it was first published, and the story still captures the attention of readers and audiences everywhere. The first film of the story was in 1917, and the first talkie of Little Women was in 1933. Katharine Hepburn played Jo March. Winona Ryder last portrayed the famous, mischievous, and ambitious Jo in 1994, and the latest to take on the role is Saoirse Ronan, under the direction of Greta Gerwig. Lake Effect film contributor Dave Lurson joined Audrey Nowakowski in the studio to talk about why this story keeps people coming back for more.
In 1868, the first edition of Little Women arrived in bookshops. It was a sensation on both sides of the Atlantic, and unlike most bestsellers, interest never waned. Alas, author Louisa May Alcott didn't live to see the advent of the motion picture camera. In the 20th and 21st centuries, no fewer than 8 adaptations have been produced. It's become a cliché. Every generation gets its own retelling of Little Women. And like many clichés, this one contains a truth.
8 adaptations. You know, what is it about a novel that came out in 2 parts, first part in 1868? What is it about the story that keeps creators and audiences revisiting it time after time?
Well, to start with, it was ahead of its time, dealing with a subject that keeps holding interest. Basically, it puts out the proposition that women are creative people whose talents are being ignored or underused, and they are being shunted into roles that may or may not be appropriate for them as individuals. So we have made some progress on this front in the past 150 years or whatever it's been now.
But it's a we still feel this way.
Well, yeah, yes. I mean, it's like moving toward a horizon that keeps moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So the suffragette movement, the wave of feminism of the 1960s, and on and on. I mean, we see that the issue of women's status in society, the ignoral of their potential as human beings, and, you know, their inferior social status in certain respects still today, it remains an issue out there. This book touched a lot of lives, apparently, right from the beginning, and continues to do so among girls who are dreaming of something beyond what they see around them and looking for that potential within themselves to be something more. Not that there is anything wrong with choosing a life of motherhood, a life of being a wife, of being focused on these things, but society at that point said, well, that's basically all you have as a choice. You don't have other choices. This book says, no, maybe there's a way of breaking out of that if that's what you want to do.
Talking about these themes, I had the thought it'd be curious if there was like a regeneration of Little Women and the March sisters, and like here's 1800s March sisters, here's 1900s, you know, and on and on.
That would be a fun way for the 9th version of this.
Right, maybe the next one.
Which might be maybe 10 years from now.
Yeah, some sort of Doctor Who kind of take on it. But this film is directed by Greta Gerwig, who broke out with her directorial debut with Lady Bird, which was a fantastic movie.
Well, we talked about that movie
when it
came out. It was a very fun, fresh kind of movie from the indie film scene, which frankly is not always fresh despite its so-called indie status. This movie was very charming and provocative in a delightful kind of way. Made one think about deeply about the characters in the movie, including the protagonist played by the woman playing Jo March in this movie, Saoirse Ronan, who I think did a wonderful job playing a role that we've seen, you know, enacted, you know, many times before by film buffs anyway, by other talented actors of their era.
Right. And Gerwig, with Lady Bird, she showed a great way of showing family relationships with parents and their kids. And now it's more so the sibling relationships. And I feel like she's very good at hitting those notes of the human elements in families. And this is her first big step from that leading indie film, Lady Bird, to now this was a massive budget film.
Yes. I mean, you definitely used Lady Bird as a springboard into the higher levels of Hollywood. And I'm sure that the challenge for her in thinking about this movie, I mean, it's an adaptation of an obviously beloved book. Many people who are going to go out to see the movie, you know, have read the book. The book may have been influential, inspirational for them. Then there is, of course, the legacy of previous movies. I mean, I don't think that too many people have seen all seven previous movies, but most yeah. of us have seen at least one or two of them.
Everything from Katharine Hepburn to Winona Ryder.
Yeah, and those two, I think, are the classic mm-hmm. versions at this point. So how do you face that? What do you do? I mean, the previous versions, and I haven't seen all of them, but I'm assuming here that they basically start at the beginning of the story and they narrate, you know, through to the end of it, leaving out certain things to fit into a feature film. She did something interesting, which usually works in this film. I think there were some confusing moments for me anyway.
No, I agree with you. So it's a bit of a, you know, what we call like a temporal scrambling, kind of hopping back and forth between the past and present. And I admit, as someone, I haven't read the book. I didn't read it when I was younger during school. And this was the first film version mm-hmm. of this story that I've seen. So at times I was a little confused.
I think that even if you have read the book, it would be a little confusing because there wasn't enough distinction between eras of time. Sometimes even places, like how did she get back to New York? I thought she was in Concord. Where, you know, it was a challenging idea, a way of rethinking how to tell the familiar story. I think there should have been maybe a little less of that. I mean, going back and forth through time is not a bad idea with a familiar story like this to kind of recontextualize it maybe to some degree. I think that there was a little bit too much of that. I have one other criticism of the movie, which I really enjoyed for the most part, but I could really tell at the two-hour point that it's the two-hour point and
this
is still
stop.
Still. I mean, the camera lingers lovingly over the typesetting process and the binding of books and all kinds of things that either maybe wouldn't have had to have been there at all or could have been condensed into a few quick seconds. But so I think that there was a little lack of judgment about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was reading the press release for the screen, it says like 2.5 hours. I was like, oh, is this going to be worth the time?
Well, I think it would have been a little bit better of a movie if it had stuck to the old two-hour maxim, which I'm a great believer in, unless it's an epic story. And maybe there's a way you could make Little Women maybe into an epic story. But this wasn't it. And so, yeah, a little more discipline with what to include and what to exclude would have been a good thing.
One thing that we eventually grew to learn and notice, so the difference between the past and present, very warm, nice tones for the past and kind of stark contrasting ones for the present. But how do you think the actresses did in portraying these women both as children and then as adults? Because these women are younger actresses, so sometimes it was hard to tell, is this their older version or is mm-hmm. this the younger version? And one of the actresses in particular, Florence Pugh, who plays Amy March, I think she did the most effective job in showing the younger sister portrayal versus the bit more hardened woman.
I think maybe it had to do with the way that the character was understood in this film version, that suddenly she became this sophisticated Henry James character, American abroad in Paris during the 19th century, hanging around with aristocrats and artists and so on. And it was, I think, a more obvious contrast to the pigtailed girl in Concord. Mm-hmm. So that could have been part of it. I mean, Joel was sort of, you know, this flurry of hyperactive creativity as a teenager in the movie and as a young adult.
Right.
So there wasn't much, I guess, evolution. She was what she was.
Yeah. And one thing I do not necessarily have issue with, but, you know, the film has the theme of the March women. They're complaining of being poor. They call themselves middle class and poor, keep on referencing poor. But I found the settings in their home all too charming to believe they were of lesser class.
Well, here's the thing that I point out in my review of this, that there is an obvious class system. It's a very benign class system, but it's obvious architecturally because you have two mansions on hills, beautiful, you know, palaces where Aunt March, played by Meryl Streep, and Laurie's grandfather, they live in mansions. Mm-hmm. Then you have the frame house where the March sisters and their mother live. Then you have the cottage where Meg and Mr. Brooke end up. It's a step down. And then down the road, you have the shack with holes in the walls where the real poor people live.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the March sisters, the March family, were examples, I believe, in the literature of the time, as of genteel poverty, kind of like some of the Jane Austen characters. They weren't really poor. But they certainly, you know, were overshadowed by the wealth around them. They were genteel enough that they could be invited to the ball, but they had to be really careful about, well, I can't spend very much money on the outfit I'm going to wear here. What am I going to do? How am I not going to look embarrassed in the company of these people? But the door was open to them.
Right.
So it's this kind of interesting situation. I think the movie did that well. But, I mean, if you're looking for class warfare, that's not evident.
It's not
in this.
On the note of Jane Austen, this movie really did remind me a lot of how I felt watching Jill Wright's 2005 Pride and Prejudice with Keira Knightley. But just a lot of the same things that really stuck with me, particularly the soundtrack, the cinematography, just the time to notice the small beauty, like in the settings. I thought costume design, setting design, all of that was great. I found it utterly charming.
Yes, it's an absorbing experience in a pleasant kind of way, which is something that, you know, I think more and more I want that if I'm going to go into a movie for 2 hours. I want to be in a beautiful place that makes me think. I don't really want to be in a terribly ugly place, even if it does make me think. I'd rather, you know, I mean, maybe it's because of the way the world is right now and the news and everything else. But I think being able to escape into a well-lit, you know, beautiful place in which people are dealing with social and personal issues and problems that are with us today is a good way of making us reflect.
Right. Do you think Gerwig cast just about the right actor for pretty much every role here?
Well, it's a great bunch of people. You know, a lot of familiar faces here. I mean, like Laura Dern as their mother, Bob Odenkirk, who I loved as Saul in Breaking Bad. He's the father.
We have Tracy Letts, another Gerwig alumna, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. Even some people maybe lesser known in this country, James North as Mr. Brooke. He's the star of Grantchester, a British television series. So, yeah, Emma Watson. I mean, you can't go wrong with this. I mean, she was able to call from a real good A and B list of talented people for this film. And I suppose, first of all, because Greta Gerwig is a rising talent, and it's a story that has a lot of familiarity and appeal. I don't think that she had a problem finding people who wanted to do this.
Right. What did you think of her writing adaptation? She wrote and directed it outside of course, the Louise May Alcott's original, you know, to base it off of.
Right. I mean, you know, it's been such a long time since I've read anything by the author. What struck me was that in the opening scene in New York, as Joe was in the editorial office, that the tone began in kind of 19th century, and then it shifted without being too abrupt into something that sounds more like the way that contemporary people today would speak without sounding anachronistic, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was a trick that she wanted to do, kind of like retaining the flavor of Shakespeare without confusing the audience. I think she was able to pull that off.
I think she did that subtly in other ways, too, like some of the costuming, taking away the tight corsets and having more of a male-style vest for the women to wear or things like that.
It could be, although maybe, again, I'm not sure about Bohemian women's fashion statements of that era, but maybe there was something about that you were making an assertion about yourself by breaking slightly free of the constraints of Victorian fashion. I don't know. It's possible.
Yeah. So this is the eighth adaptation. Do you think this is the new definitive Little Women?
Too early to tell. It just, opened. I'm stuck on the Winona Ryder 1994, I believe it came out, version of it. I'm going to guess that that version will be the one to endure more than this one, because the Winona Ryder version was a more straightforward narrative beginning to end. And this one, I think, is a little more challenging and might in the long term not be as interesting to people. But I could be wrong about that.
But overall, recommended?
Oh, yeah. I think if you have any interest in the book and previous movies, you'll want to see this version of it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Dave Lurson is one of our regular film contributors, and he's the arts and entertainment editor of the Shepherd Express newspaper. You can find more of our film conversations with him and others at wuwm.com.